Well, welcome. How are you all? Doing good? All right, let's start out with a quiz. Numbers. If something has like five, you find five things, what does that mean? What's that's the symbol of? Progress yet? Incompleteness. All right, how about four? Can't look at your cheat sheet. All right, huh? Yeah, it's physical completeness. Every direction, it's universal completeness, earthly completeness, however you want it. It's the tangible things. So if you have nations, kindreds, tongues, and people, it's really four of the same thing, but it's saying if you have a message especially attached to that, it's supposed to go everywhere, right? So, yeah, good. All right, how about the number 10?
You skipped that one.
I didn't skip that one.
Judicial
and political completeness. All right, so if you have 10 kings or 10 horns, it's talking about a plurality of nations, a complete plurality of nations. How many laws are there in God's commandments?
10.
How long were Daniel and his friends tested to see whether it was long enough?
10 days.
Yeah. So it's just enough to complete a test. All right. So you just passed your test. All right. Good. What about 12? Yeah. Eternal completeness. So that's why when you get to the end of time, you get into the new earth, you have all these 12s, because what will happen then? Will those things die away? No, they're going to last forever. They're eternal. And so we like the number 12. It's God's kingdom number. All right? Good. All right. Well, let's move forward in our study on Revelation. We're going to dig in a little bit today, but we have to just hovered for just a little bit on looking at how this great book comes together. And I think we left a couple questions unanswered on your study sheet, okay? So let's go there now. You should find we had gotten up to number 7 on the second page. And it says, give examples of some of these parallels that we have been talking about. All right? So let's just do that as a class here so that we can, I guess, complete that part. And then we'll move on. Am I succeeding in demonstrating, or are we succeeding in demonstrating that the book of Revelation is a masterfully planned book? All right, and that it has inspirational marks all over it. I want that to be nailed down firmly, because there is so much, again, in the world today where degrading things are said about this book. But I want to convince you, or leave you convinced, that this is a marvelous, marvelous document, just in its literary quality. But its inspirational quality is even more so. That it could be accurate prophetically, and yet still be so organized literarily, is a miracle. It demands, I believe, a divine hand that holds it together. So when we talk about these synonymic parallels, a synonym is something that's similar to something else, right? What do we mean by that? These are word sisters and cousins, ideas that repeat themselves throughout the book. Why is this important? Well, several reasons. One is it can help in interpretation, because when you find how it's used, you know how to put the puzzle together and get the whole picture. Another thing that it demonstrates, I think, powerfully, is that the book of Revelation is an inspired and ordered document. It's not a haphazard casting together of some visions or some some literary writing. It's not that at all. It's a tremendously symmetrical, ordered account. And it one of the ways we know this is by tracing these parallels through. Okay? So what are some examples of some of these parallels? There are literally hundreds of them. I believe that the distinct ideas, there's at least between 150 and 200 in each section. All right? At least. And in volumes 4 and volume 7, we have about 150 of them there. But that's not by any means all of them. Okay? So what are some examples of these? Can anybody think of any that we've referred to? There's some listed here, but I'm talking about some maybe some other different ones. Let me give you some to write down so that you can fill in your five blanks, okay? Yeah, just for instance, you know, we have things, I'm going off of my mind, but things worn on the head, okay, on your head. What things do you find worn on your head? Well, we don't have any caps. We have crowns. We have two different kinds. We have the Stephanos crown, which is the wreath crown, and then we have the diadem crown, which is what? Yeah, it's the kingly crown, okay? So there's two. What other things do you find worn on the head? There's a wreath of stars, okay? Jewels. Anything else that you can think of that's worn on the head that shows up in Revelation? There are no helmets. No crown of thorns. Inference, maybe. All right. This is a very interesting one. there's a rainbow in chapter 4. Worn as a crown, a sign of the covenant, over God's throne. It's over his head, all right? Another one that's interesting is sackcloth. It's mentioned. Because people, when they mourned in those days, where they would put, it was actually a goat's hair called sackcloth, and where did they wear it? Always, they put it over their head. They would weep with it over their head, okay? So here's sackcloth. What do horses wear on their heads? A bridle. And, yeah, okay. Yeah, no mention of that in Revelation. I couldn't find any veil that way that's worn over the head. But, what do you guys have on your heads, most of you?
Hair.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We need another one. There is another one. It's very similar to this one. When they're weeping in Revelation, what do they put on their heads? Dust. Dust. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And you will find it in each section. You will find it there. Jesus is in the first vision. His hair is as snow. And then you go a little later, you get into one of these wreaths, or it's called a Stephanos. My name means crown, and Stephanie's name means crown. This kind of crown, the victory crown. Then you have Jesus wearing seven of these when he comes in Revelation 19, and they're some of these put on horns. Horns represent what, just for fun? Kingdoms, but more than that. Political powers that what? That emerge out of another power, all right? You don't just suddenly have horns show up in prophecy. A horn tells you if a horn comes up, it had to come up out of what? A head, okay? Which is already a governmental power in symbol. So anyway, yeah. So you have at least these, and sometimes there's 7, sometimes there's 14. Sometimes there's, as in the case of Jesus' names, different names, the Lamb, and the different titles that he's kind of given or inferred to, there's 28 of them in the book of Revelation. So, but it's usually some multiple of 7. And how that could all work out in the 14 subsections like that is amazing. It's totally amazing. You can just trace it one to the next to the next. You have at least one of these show up. Sometimes one will show up more than once because of the way the story goes, but then it's represented there. But there's no section that doesn't have one of these references. Okay, that's one example. Let's think of some others. I noticed one of the things that you see a lot is a remnant. A remnant show up. All right? And just some quick examples of that is you have a remnant crop that shows up in one of the sections. Wine and oil. These were always the last two crops of an agricultural year, and it's specifically meant to mean that in that context. Huh? Yeah, Revelation 12:17, what does it say? You have to make war with the remnant of her seed. Yeah. Yeah, and so you have this remnant idea, it always shows up. Even in Revelation 20, for instance, it says, the rest of the dead live not again until the 1,000 years, those that were left over live not, So you have this whole idea as you have a group and then you have some left over at the end. It's just a consistent idea that always can be found there. Just fascinating. That all these thoughts could come together in the prophet's mind and all be represented. Okay, what about some symbols of authority? Yeah, a king has authority, but I'm talking about a physical symbol. Yeah, rod of iron. Yeah, I don't know if we'll get them all. We'll just, what I found is I'm not so sure that I've got them all right, but I know that God had them all right. And if we study long enough, we'll come up to it. Yeah. Especially in the first, yes, a sword is a good one. No, well, Rome isn't even mentioned as a throne. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm sorry. I thought he said something else. Yes, a throne. Yes, a seal. Same thing.
Crown.
Yes, a crown. Both kinds, really. When Ted or whoever the deacon in charge was today came to the church this morning, what did he need?
A key.
A key. And so you have keys. A key to the bottomless pit over there in Revelation 9. You got the key of David and the keys of Jesus has the keys of hell and of death. And you have keys all over the place. All right? Do you get you get the picture? Isn't it marvelous? Come on, say amen or something.
Amen.
All right. So another one might be, let me think. There's a lot of them where you have clothing, different kinds of clothing, all right?
Apparel,
yeah. There's actually several kinds of, there's a robe that's actually called a stole. We get the word stole out of it, but a stole in women's garments is a little different. It was a stole was what the priests wore, a simple white robe, all right? So I got to make it stole. And there's several kinds of garments that show up. Then there's also, what's the woman in Revelation 17 dressed in? Fine linen. Yeah, fine linen. And she's in kind of a, it's called a hamadion. It's a certain kind of garment. And then when Jesus shows up in Revelation 1, he's wearing what they call a padere. I don't know how to translate. But pod, when you go see a podiatrist, who do you go see? A foot doctor. A padere was a foot reacher. It's a garment that reaches to your foot. Very specific kind of garment. The priests were told to wear these garments. And so when Jesus shows up in Revelation 1 wearing this particular padere, it's a specific term, meaning he's wearing the high priest's garment that you wore every day, not the high priest's garments that you wore on special days. He's wearing the common garb of the high priest that was worn every day. And that actually figures out very important. But it was a foot reacher. And when you get to, well, what's the woman in Revelation 12 clothed with? Clothed with the sun. Yeah, with light. All right. Yeah, and you have in Revelation 10, there's an angel that's clothed with a cloud. All right? And you think, okay, and then we have the white robes, we have all kinds of things. And you think, well, when you get to the New Jerusalem or the last chapters, there's not like any garment there. All right? Oh, yes, there is. It actually says that the city is dressed. It uses the word enduo for dressed. And it's dressed, what is the holy city dressed with? Precious stones, all right? Precious stones and pearls and whatever. Anyway, if we kept at it, folks, we would get different kinds of garments. There's even a special garment that's thrown on the horse in Revelation 19. It's the horse blanket. And so, yeah, we'll put the horse blanket. Horse lovers have got to love Revelation because there's a lot about horses in there. All right?
That would be like a serape.
I don't know what a serape is.
That's a horse blanket?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, and there's this horse blanket, and then there's some embroidery along here. It says King of Kings, Lord of Lords. But anyway, so you end up with these different garments, and then you can even come up with it goes further. It keeps breaking down. That you have maybe seven different things that garments are made of. Wool, linen, silk, all of those mentioned in Revelation. And there are sanctuary articles. If you want to just say, okay, let's look at sanctuary articles through the book of Revelation, there'll always be something. Take any passage in the book, pick out something, pick out an object, then go match it with other places in the book. You'll be able to do that always if you're careful and with it. All right? So you got the idea? Let's just, for interest, just labor this a little bit longer, because there's the best way to illustrate it is to take one of these almost clear through. Instead of just making a list, but do it section by section. And that's what it's said to do, an exercise here. Something found in the east, all right? And by the way, there'll be something in the south and the west and the north too, all right? It's just incredible, because when you get to the last part, you have gates on what sides of the city? Yeah, you have stuff. And you'll find that there are always symbols there. You have to know a little bit of biblical knowledge to find them all sometimes, because you need to know that Jesus holds something in his right hand. Well, to those people, the right hand always meant the south. So like Benjamin, when his mother dies in the southern part of Palestine, Rachel, he gets the name Ben, son, Yamin, of the south. Meaning that he was a son born in the south. But And it has a sorrow thing too there. But Jacob comes along, he says, no, he's the son of my right hand. Favor, okay? Means the same thing. But right hand is south, okay? Because every Israelite thought of himself as facing east, all right? And if he faced it east, where would the right hand be? South. The left hand would be north, and behind him would be west. And that figures up all. And so you have things before and behind in all kinds of ways. So you, if you want to trace that through, you can. All right? So here's east. And this one was really fun for me when because I thought, well, I only remember seeing a couple places where the east was mentioned. Oh, people, we need to be good Bible students. And so it was a lot more times when you really looked at it closely. The first one, and remember each section, here you have the church section. You have on one side, you have kind of a counterbalance. So each section, churches, seals, trumpets, great controversy, plagues, laments, restoration. Each one is divided in half. And this side balances out this side. So it's really, really, it seems complicated, but it really it maps out nicely. So on this side, I look for something from the east, and the thing that's mentioned is paradise. I'm too close to it. Paradise. It's a Persian word, actually. Para means parallel, all right? It was a four-walled garden, is really what it was in Eastern culture. Everybody knew that. They just, whenever they saw the word, it said four-walled garden, square garden, all right? And the Garden of Eden, ideally, was in what shape? Four rivers went out from it, blah, 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 blah. Okay? Some are not seeing. Okay. Eden, saying, is another word for paradise. Was it a beautiful garden? Yeah. When you go to Genesis, what does it say? And the Lord God planted a garden eastward in Eden. All right? So the whole idea of the east is all wrapped up in this paradise thing. Okay? The only time paradise is mentioned in the book of Revelation as paradise. Why is it mentioned this way? Well, because you also need something that's four square. Four square, four square, four square. But I don't want to. I can't go down that track now. I've got to go down this track. All right? It's just ingenious, folks. It is so ingenious. This is... All right. This is good. Over here, into the Church of Thyatira, and it's almost in the same relationship, same part of the document, just balances, mirrors the other side. We have, and I will give him the morning star. Folks, where do you see the morning star? In the east. That's the only place you can see the morning star. All right? Well, why is it there? Well, we need it here. Okay? All right, let's go over here to the next section. And this is cool, too. The lion of the tribe of Judah. Anybody know where the Israelites camped? In the wilderness, and how they camped, and everyone had a standard, a flag, and the one that had a flag with a lion on it was the tribe of Judah. And where did they camp? Right straight east. Okay? So why is that? Well, it's right there. The east. All right? Okay, then we go on this side and say, well, is this going to hold up? Yeah. Well, Revelation 7, we almost got there last week. We were doing some a little bit of testing of our skills, all right? There's an angel, got a message. He's ascending from where? The east. And it doesn't really say east. It says from the sun rising. All right? But we translate it east. I'm going to put the sun rising. Because where does the sun rise? In the east. All right? And you go on and on and on. It just is like the Euphrates River is the river of the east. Over here you have the court of the Gentiles. Mentioned, it says the court which is without, leave out, and whatever. You need to know a map of how the temple was laid out. But especially if you go to Ezekiel's description of the idealized temple in chapters 40 to 50 and on in there in Ezekiel, a lot is said about this east side. All right? So that's on the east. Then Revelation 12. This one's fun too. John sees in heaven a particular wild animal.
Lion.
He doesn't see a lion. Revelation 12. There's a woman standing in the sun, and there's also a great red dragon. I remember growing up, we had these encyclopedias, and it had a thing about China and the East in there. And the thing I can still see, just in my mind, just flashing at me, is the lead page was a picture of a dragon, okay? And how people would carry these dragon-like things. They have celebrations. Dragons and serpents are always equated with the East, all right? And Babylon, and you go, I'm going to, you know, for sake of time, but you'll go all the way through, and then when we get to the new earth, the last section, you have on one side gates into the city. On the east are three gates, and on the west, and on the whatever. And then back here we get the morning star again mentioned. It says, I, Jesus, you know, I'm the root and the offspring of David and the bride and morning star. Folks, it's just marvelous. I have to ask you, if God goes through all this care to make an interesting document for us to study, is this about scaring people? Is this a gospel of fear? Please, please, let's let go of that. And anybody that you find that gets that view of Revelation, it's because they're reading it surface. It's not that they're really looking at it. God is trying to make an interesting book for us. Is he doing a good job? I think he's doing a very good job. And it also, these tools, not just make it interesting, they also lead us to the proper interpretations and understandings as we go on through. Just one more example for something that's fun. Let's go to a loud roaring sound. Now, there are different loud sounds that show up, colors and all kinds of things that show up. Loud sounds, but I'm thinking of the deep rumbling kind of more sounds, okay? Because both some of these shrieking kind of high-pitched sounds show up, like the woman in childbirth, all right? Yeah. And she cries out in pain and to be delivered. So you have a trumpet. What kind of sound does a trumpet make? Yeah, loud, more piercing sound. So you can trace those through. But I'm talking about, let's just trace through for a moment or look at some of the more deep rumbling sound. Jesus shows up in Revelation and he's speaking and his voice is the sound of many waters. Much water. Think about how that just... Do you like to go to the ocean and listen to that rumble? I mean, it is so powerful, and it's likened to God's voice, this sound, power, and deep rumbling sound. And so much water can come in different ways, like a waves coming in off the ocean. That's a lot of water. Pacific Ocean has a little bit in it, doesn't it? Oh, yeah. What about, have anybody been here to like Niagara Falls or one of those places? What, when you're standing right on the lip or you go in that boat up, what's that like? I mean, you can't even hardly talk to one another. It is just shaking. It's just rumbling. It's the sound of much water, okay? All right, what are other sounds that are like that that we meet every day in our world? Thunder. And that one comes up very regularly, okay? So, water, lots, thunder, earthquake. How many have been in a real earthquake? Yeah. It's not fun. I never really quite get used to it, though I lived in Alaska for a while, and it's funny, you go to the grocery store, and one of these quakes would come through, you know, sometimes 6.0s and whatever. People just keep right on shopping. Stuff's falling off the shelves. They just said, wait a minute, it'll be over soon, and whatever. But there is, if you're near the epicenter or near whatever, there is a deep rumbling sound, and the prophets talk about this, and the Bible talks about that. It's very, actually kind of scary when that happens. All right? That's right. An earthquake. See? We're thinking of Revelation here. All right. Huh? Oh, good. A roaring lion. I was going to have some of this recorded for you to play these sounds one after another and so the similarity. But you know, and God uses these symbols to talk to you. And he you know, yeah, so lion's roar. They say a lion's roar can sometimes be heard up to 2 miles away. And it'll like, you know, it's a very guttural sound, all right? So, it shows up in Revelation, you know, that the sound was much like maybe, you know, thunder and as the sound of a lion that is roaring or whatever. Wind. I used to think there were 7 of these, and I think there's 14. Huh? Yeah. Well, a trumpet, but that's more of the shrill sound. However, you can make a case on that, actually, because the shofar, it depends how you blow it. You can come out with different sounds. But probably that would match better with the high-pitched sound, like we mentioned before. Yeah. Drums. Yeah, but I don't find any drums in Revelation. Tell you the truth, I'm thankful. But anyway. Okay. Have you ever been in a big crowd? Yeah, I guess you go to places like when the Seahawks are playing. And yeah, I mean, they say the decibels. I mean, Seattle outshouts them all. They're crazy up there. But it rumbles when you have a large crowd. But it's mentioned in Revelation several places. It says as the sound, and it gives several examples of a large crowd and as much thunder. And there's other ones given. Okay, so let's say crowd. We call it the roar of the crowd. Elizabeth and I once, we went to a camp meeting, and they gave us a room that was right under the threshold of the door of all the, where you go into the cafeteria. Try staying in that room and getting some sleep at about 6 or 7 in the morning. It was just this constant the rumbling of the crowd. All right. So you get the idea. Another one that shows up is this the sound of their wings, talking about all these locusts, was as the sound of many horses or horsemen riding into battle. It's talking about a stampede. Have you ever heard about that? I mean, they say when the buffalo roamed the west, that you could hear the roar of a stampede 100 miles away. 100 miles away. And if you've ever heard horses in a whole group of them, and you think of this running to battle, Do you think that's a kind of piddly-piddly sound? Oh my. You know, that's almost an earthquake-style rumble. It's a very, I don't know how to describe it. So these just come up over and over again, and they're consistent in their pattern. It's wonderful. When the sound of wings, anybody ever scared a grouse and the grouse scared you more than you scared the grouse? Think of multiplying that times 1,000 or 1,000,000. You have a rumbling sound. When I was growing up, we lived up in North Central Washington. The flight path for migratory birds coming south and north, and our family, it was a family of bird watchers, and so the seasons when there would be these migratory happenings, we would go out and watch, go different places, because we were right in the path. And every year, at a certain time, the sandhill cranes would come through. And if you ever have a chance to go witness something like that, do that. It's very much worth it. They'd come in about sunset, and they'd all settle in out there, what we call up over Mansfield. It's up high country kind of, but there's a lot of little lakes and fields. And they'd come in there and they'd settle in there. And then when the sun would go down, they would all take off. And we went out there just for that moment when they would all take off. And these sandhill cranes, you know, these are big birds. These are like cranes. I mean, they're big birds. And when multiplied, thousands of those would take off. Oh man, folks, this is grand. I mean, it was just, the ground, it was almost shaking. It was just this rumbling sound of their wings as they all went to the air, and it was a grand sight. I'll never forget it. It's written in my mind. And it's written in our minds, these kinds of things, because those same symbols show up. And I think God does it deliberately. He could just write it in a just kind of scientific fashion. No, he does it to grab our interest and to pique our memories and to bring about, greater interest in this book. Okay, well, so do you got some of the, I guess I've spent way too much time on that. Do you get the picture? All right, and if you want to do more of these, right there in the study guide is given where the sections begin and end, and that helps you. But by doing this, this is how I know that the book of Revelation is a unified document. Otherwise, people can make the argument that I don't think this author knew about this, and this is a different author over here, and this doesn't relate. But when you find that these patterns go clear through, what does that tell you about the document? It's all together, right? And it's probably is written by the same author. And it has a divine undergirding and purpose to it. It's very important that we recognize that. Okay? All right. Let's just think for a moment. Go to the island of Patmos. And we're gonna get into the book in just a moment. But we have to pause just to carry this point a little further, of how much is looked at in these 22 chapters of this book. If I have looked at a lot of different Bible books, and they're, for what they're written for, they're just all of them beautiful in their own way. John, the Gospel of John, or the letters of Paul, or they are all great in their way. But there is no book like Revelation when it comes to touching on so many things, so many subjects. And I don't know how else to illustrate that but to look at some of the things that we're just going to go over quickly. And if you've read one of the initial chapters here, we've talked about the broad curriculum. The curriculum is what you learn, is the study. It's the educational system that you're looking at, and it's so broad. There's so much included in the book of Revelation. I believe the reason for that is that nobody is left out of an interest area. You name any subject, I believe Revelation at least infers to it once, if not seven times or more, all right? It's just the way it is. So here's just some example of this to see how God, how he tantalizes our interest. Here is farmer. If you're a farmer, you're interested in agriculture, there's a lot written in the book of Revelation about that. All right? Jesus even appears as a farmer in Revelation 14. He's carrying a sharp sickle. Yeah, he's going to reap the earth and or the grapes, the vintage of the earth. So he shows up as a farmer. And all kinds of crops and famines and even in Revelation 18, there's all kinds of agricultural products that are listed. Okay, so there's a ton of stuff for a farmer or somebody who works with the earth in the book of Revelation. Of course, the Bible culture is largely agrarian, so of course you're going to find this. But it's just interesting to me that God has something for everybody in there. Archaeology. Wow, I mean, people who study Revelation or who study archaeology spend time studying Revelation. Elizabeth and I had the privilege of actually going over to the seven churches and the Holy Land here a few years ago. But just the archaeology of the book of Revelation alone and the Bible places and the things that it refers to and how that figures into history is a discipline all in itself. Very interesting. Art. Some of the greatest art you're going to find is in the book of Revelation. It's inspired incredible art projects by various artists. And just the way those pictures... I mean, what do we have? We have images, don't we? Don't we have images? We have all kinds of images. So here is a fruitful field for any artist, many kinds of artists, actually, in the book of Revelation. And references are made to craftsmen and artisans as well. In several places. Anyway, so it's an interesting pursuit all in its own. Of course, I've got to put this one in. Astronomy. But actually, astronomy several times is informative, contributes to the message of Revelation. There's a ton of stuff in there to fascinate astronomers, including falling stars and all kinds of things. Jesus holds the seven stars, the Pleiades, in his right hand, and some of the time of the end events and so forth. It's a great place for an astronomer to do some study and find some interest. Of course, then there's biology, all kinds of life processes, plants, animals, creatures. Unripe figs, ripe figs. You get all these olives. You know, wine, grapes, just a ton of stuff to do with biology and that kind of things. Chemistry, I dare say, chemistry actually shows up in chapter 1. It talks about exactly a certain way in which copper is refined and how it looks and what color happens when you refine copper. We'll get to that maybe sometime. It's all there. Metallurgy, you're going to find some of it even in the book of Revelation. Just crazy. You can just take almost any subject. Commerce and economics, yeah, boycotts and you know, products and craftsmen and transportation to take these things here and there. And yeah, it shows up. You know, in some way, it shows up, all these subjects. Construction and building. Cosmetology, in that case, we're talking about repeated references to perfumes and ointments and cosmetics and bridal preparation and jewelry and specific stones and pearls and garments. All kinds of fashion shows up there. So, I mean, I don't know what your profession is, but you're going to find something probably related to it in the book of Revelation. Drama and theater. It's basically a play written. That's what it is. You have scenes, you have actors, you have a stage, and these keep coming in. I mean, it's kind of like the drama's drama, of the ages. It's a great pursuit just to look at the dramatic quality. Because it's put in picture form, we have instant drama and historical drama. Yeah, engineering and industry. I could get into all these. Geography and surveying. You have to know where certain places are in the world. You know, the great river Euphrates. And certain things are mentioned that ask for a certain knowledge of geography. And even measurements. You know, how much is a stade or a furlong? And you deal with all kinds of this. Surveying, whatever. History? Is Revelation about history? Hello? Yeah, very much so. It's fascinating history. It's the history of our world. Lapidary, stones, all these stones. You can spend hours and years studying the different stones and how they were used. Lapidary language, just... We work out a little bit here. We talk about the different languages. We mentioned Persian, Hebrew, Greek, Latin, English even. All these languages you deal with when you're studying the book of Revelation. Literature and journalism. Yeah, we even have news reporters giving news reports. And public proclamation. Oh, all over the place. Through the air, on the radio waves, as it were. Oh, yeah. All there, you know. Mathematics, you took the number test this morning, right? Okay. And actually, if people like Sir Isaac Newton, whatever, wrote a whole book on the numerology of Revelation. You know, you can go a long ways. Medicine, all kinds of medicinal things are talked about, like wine and oil. It was poured on the Good Samaritan, or the Good Samaritan poured on his victim. There's different kinds of medicine, myrrh, ointments, different kinds of healing remedies, and some of the poisonous or toxic things you deal with. And the knowledge of medicine, I think medical doctors really... You need a couple of them around even to interpret parts of the book, because it's important to recognize how medicine is used then and how it's used now. Music. You have to realize that a lot of these, especially the laments at the end of the book, near the end of the book, are all songs. It's seven songs in a row. These are songs. The great anthems in Revelation 4 and 5, these are the anthems that inspired Handel to write the Messiah. Much of it is quoted right out of Revelation 4 and 5. Handel wrote his music by reading the book of Revelation and other passages as well. So there's no end to the music that can, you know, worthy is the Lamb that is... The music is there. It's just, I wish more music was written. But I think the songs, the spiritual songs that bring tears to my eyes or really deeply move me are the songs from Revelation. You know, no more night, no more pain. All those kinds of things that come out of that book. And physics. Oh yeah, all kinds of motion. We have things falling. We have things thrown. We have all kinds of physics going on. I could go into that. Poetry, tons of it. Politics and law, by the mountainful. Religion, society and culture, huge backgrounds to the theology. It is a book of theology. Transportation, yeah. I mean, we could go list here different kinds of transportation. You know, we have boats, and we have horses. Chariots. Actually have, when you get to Revelation 18, you have a four-wheeled chariot. Mentioned. Not just an ordinary, a four-wheeled, modern piece of transportation. Do we have any four-wheeled modern pieces of transportation? Just incredible. Anyway. And zoology. All about animals. Yeah, I mean, you even have to know when it figures how many toes does a bear have. Well, that comes up in the study of Revelation. So it's just very fascinating. All right. Wow. I think it just deserves mentioning that the comprehensive nature of Revelation's material is quite extraordinary, that God would put this all in one book. Do you think he's trying to get our attention? And is he just trying to get Parnell's attention or Pat's attention? No. There's even stuff about hair in there. We just talked about it, isn't there, Parnell? He's trying to get all of our attention, and he's got something for us all in there. I like to get my toes and feet into all of them somehow, you know. You learn a lot about all these different disciplines just by studying God's Word. Astronomy, oh wow, you know, I mean, just all this stuff, it's just cool. All right, so it's doubtful that any works of this short length in either biblical or non-biblical literature could match the broad spectrum of what we've looked at. And this isn't all, there's so much more. This plethora of interest, I believe, is a book, an indication of the book's inspiration. Okay? All right. Well, this is, I'm on a boat here. I'm approaching the Isle of Patmos. And this is a setting of where this vision is given. Now there's a nice little town there, probably at the beach. There's actually a very narrow isthmus of land right here. Ocean on the other side, or the Adriatic. Or Aegean Sea on the other side, and but you land here in the boats, and I was surprised how far out there it is. It took us half a day by boat to get out there. Huh? Yes. So he was truly in exile, and there was no way off of that island. Other than, you know, somebody coming by to get him. And it would have been tempting for him to think that God had abandoned him, that he had no purpose in life, and that he was at a hopeless ends of the earth and lost. But remember, folks, this is where the greatest prophecy of modern times of the Christian dispensation was given. Never think because you live in Podunkville that God doesn't have a purpose for you. Or a great purpose for you in your own sphere. God can take Patmoses and turn them into revelations and unveilings. We went ashore. We did some activities there, but just after we ate a meal or something, Elizabeth and I just kind of broke away from the group and went down and stood on that little beach that's down there, and just thought about it and prayed that God would somehow use the privilege of us being there to continue to give the message that John was given at that spot. I believe that was very close to the spot where he was given the vision. Tradition has it that he's given the vision up out of the picture, up at St. John's Monastery, up actually a cave of the Apocalypse, and that he was actually back in a cave with his head under a rock, kind of like, and that's where God gave him the vision. But what are the symbols that come to John's mind? And I heard his voice as the sound of much water. What was John by profession? He was a fisherman. He's been away from his Lord, his crucified Lord. But when Jesus came to John, where did he come to John first in his life? Where was it? Was it in a cave under a rock? It was on a beach where they were spreading their nets. And if he came back to see his beloved servant and to reveal something to you, where do you think John was waiting for him? Down there on the beach. John loved boats. You know, if you're a boat lover, you can't imagine him being in a cave. You have to have him down there at the boat somewhere. And that's where God talked to him. So that's where I pictured in his mind. And we just renewed our vision that we want to, you know, that message that was given applies to our day. And we need to get that message out that Jesus is coming soon. All right, let's talk for just a minute about how the book of Revelation is organized. You will find different ideas out there of how it's organized. I think knowing how it's organized can really help because, remember I talked about cycles and structures? So if you know what belongs to what, it makes a difference. And these are some of the cycles. These are some of the structures. And it breaks down a lot from here. I have it out here. I believe this is the general overall organization. Why do I know that? Well, there are literary markers. You know, he will change from talking to churches. He will talk about seals, and then he'll change to talk about trumpets. So some of that is pretty obvious. But remember, we talked about these. By establishing these patterns consistently through the book is another way of arguing that these are sections. And they're sections that stand by themselves in a sense. And so when you take all the data and put it together, and I have spent countless hours working on this, all right, this seems to be the organization that I think is the most consistent. And I suggest that... Well, you can adopt whatever you want. But I'm just saying, I think this is what you would come up with the same amount of effort. All right? The churches, the seals, the trumpets, great controversy vision in the middle, plagues, laments, and the restoration. And they're all, these three here and these three here, almost identical in length. All right? This one is shorter because it's in the middle and goes both ways. And so it doesn't really need to be as long. All right, is really basically chapter 12 of Revelation. And there's a fascinating study of just the organization and how it's laid out. These seven visions, there have to be seven, right? And they have a matching pattern, and we could go all into it. There are other ways of looking at it. Jacques Ducan looks at it in terms of a... The feasts. You have the Passover, Pentecost, trumpets, Day of Atonement, and then there was kind of a gap between you got to in a year to tabernacles, and they fit those themes. Fascinating, and I think those are things we should recognize and not, you know, I see those as great ways of looking at it. Rondale saw a seven-branch candlestick there, and so I think it makes sense. You'll find a lot of things that relate one to another. Churches, if we look at this as a historical document, you have churches here, the churches here that are really kind of almost before the Christian dispensation. So you're talking about the time before all that's happened in the intervening centuries since Jesus, right? Here you have stuff that happens after everything is closed up, all right? You go here, you have a focus. Remember, the whole history is there. It goes clear to the second coming of Christ in each section. But the focus, it's expanded in these sections. The focus is on the early part of history. Even starts with a lamb freshly slain, you know, and so forth. So this is at the very, this is mostly the millennium and the time after the close of probation, the fall of Babylon and whatever. This is early, this is late. Then this is kind of more tending more between the beginning of history, of Christian history, and up to and a little after the close of probation, okay? Same here, in reverse. And then here, in this marvelous chapter, these 17 verses, brilliantly written. Every word counts. You have all of history. going both ways. It starts with Eve and Eden, really, the proto-evangelion, the whole idea of her seed and the serpent's seed and whatever, and the battle between the great dragon, the great serpent, that old devil called the devil, the serpent called the devil and Satan. And it ends with the war against the remnant at the end of time. He went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and have the faith of Jesus. So you have all of comprehensive controversy history right there in the middle. It goes both ways. Wonderful document. And we could talk very much more about that. Let's just close with this. Get near where I wanted to get today. You've been patient. This book, we're talking about Revelation, right? This book demands, read it with me if you can. This book demands close, prayerful study, lest it be interpreted according to the ideas of men and false construction be given to the sacred word of God, which in its symbols and figures means so much to everybody else, to us. All right. I want to take each one of those words and preach a sermon on it right now. To your relief, I won't. But remember we talked about one of the rules was to see if the spirit of prophecy or if the testimony of the prophets agree with what we're saying. Remember we've been talking about symbols and figures? Notice how she says that. What does she call it? Which in its symbols and figures means so much to us. And it demands careful, prayerful study. So we're trying to do all of that. The close, careful, prayerful. And I pray that will be what we all do. We don't want to interpret it according to our ideas. We want to interpret it according to God's ideas. All right? So we'll go to work on that in a bit. All right, let's close with prayer. Father, we've just spent some time just kind of looking at the beautiful harmony that you've worked out in Revelation as a book. Lord, it is truly the veil is pulled aside, and we see you working in marvelous ways in this book. May it inspire us to know you better and to study more, yes, but to understand more of your purposes and to be open to your leading. Bless these people. They have come out this afternoon and just to catch more of a glimpse of your glorious truth. Reward them and reward all of us as we study and look for truth. Now, bless us as our week continues now and as a new week is before us, that we will go about our various occupations and interests, but every time we see those things that are all about us, that might interest us or catch our attention, we can see that those symbols and things remind us of you and the lessons that you would have us learn. So bless us, I pray, in Jesus' name, amen.